My name is Michael. I'm a female alcoholic. I get to go first because I had the least amount of sobriety, which feels pretty good because lately I've had the most. Gosh, so many blessings and lessons. Thank you. Where's Ralph? Did you give us that? I love that. Blessings and lessons. And that's what I think I'll share about. The first thing I want to say that I'm most thankful for, the greatest gift I have been given, is my sobriety and the ability to work with others. And it talks about that in the big book when it says, why shouldn't we laugh? We have recovered and we've been given the power to help others. I was about 10 years sober. Everything in my life was perfect except my sponsor had died. But I had just gotten a promotion at work. I worked for musical theater industry and I was promoted to business manager. And when I came into this program, I had a ninth grade education. I didn't know how to work. I was reduced to prostitution and I was a thief. And to end up in the position I ended up in is beyond my wildest dreams. Another thing I'm very, very grateful for is the fact that I have willingness to do anything that they tell me to do, because I really didn't think this program would work for me because of the God word. You know, I had just tried to recover in church, and I had a torrid affair with that one-legged minister, and I stole I stole the church money. You know, I became secretary of the church. I stole the money. My alcohol. So my only hope was God. And you know, I had this huge spiritual experience before I went to this church. The experience I had led me to the church, and it was equivalent to one that Bill had in Bill's story. And I know that experience was enough for me to come to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I don't think I was able to stay sober with that experience because I did not have a plan of action to go with it. And that's what you gave me here in Alcoholics Anonymous. You gave me a plan of action. You gave me directions. And that's what I needed. I needed directions, which brought about a spiritual experience of the educational variety. And I am way, way for the educational variety spiritual experience. But anyway, at 10 years of sobriety, I got this promotion, and I had to... The theater I worked for was Equity, which means union, and that means we dealt with big major stars. And I had to represent the company and go to a birthday party for Debbie Reynolds. Now, all of you are too young to know who Debbie Reynolds is, but I was so impressed I could hardly stand it. Because when I was a little girl, she was just my favorite movie star. And it was her 57th birthday party, so I had to go represent my company. And a few other people that I worked with came. You know, I sat there around all these social drinkers. They were all drinking socially. Nobody was drinking alcoholically. And if somebody was drinking alcoholically and making a bet out of themselves, it might not have been so appealing. But that wasn't happening. They were all social drinking. They were laughing. They were at ease. They were, you know, and I just was so uptight, and I was so nervous, and I didn't want to screw up. And I got into that stinking thinking. Now, I haven't been to a meeting in 2 weeks because I'm going to school and I'm much too busy growing in the business world. I'm not working with any other alcoholics because I'm going to school and I'm growing in the business world. I'm really busy. And that stinking thinking just kicked in. I found myself thinking, you know, maybe now that I have this very impressive job, and I drive a brand new car, and I have a cute little house. I have an education. I'm not that little girl from the other side of the tracks anymore. Maybe that's why I really drank, because I spent from the other side of the tracks. I almost talked myself into taking a drink that night. The only reason why I didn't is because all my coworkers knew that I was sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had enough respect for this program. I didn't want to embarrass it by drinking in front of them. So I put it off for the next day. I was going to try drinking the next day. So anyway, the next day, the executive director came up to me and she asked me to pay a 12-step call on a makeup artist who hadn't shown up for work in over 2 weeks, and the motel he was in was trying to get him out. And I wasn't happy about it. It interfered with my plans. But I called another sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, a man, and we went together to this motel, and I knocked on his door, and I just identified myself, Michael Alcoholic, and he answered the door. If that would have been me, I would not have answered the door. But I didn't recognize him. He's a makeup artist, and the man standing in front of me is bald-headed. He's so swollen. He looked, I don't know, 10 times his normal size. He's profusely sweating, and he's bleeding from head to toe because he kept falling into objects. He smelled of urine, he smelled of alcohol, and he smelled of vomit. And at that point, I had a spiritual experience. I had an inner voice talk to me. It was loud, and it was clear. And it said, Michael, you're not like the people you were with last night. If you drink again, you're standing in front of a mirror. He doesn't know it, but he's the one who paid the 12-step call on me. Because that night I got my fanny into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's where I eventually got to Seal Beach and got a new sponsor to replace my sponsor who had passed on, Polly. She's been my sponsor for 23 years now. I've never been with anybody for 23 years. No, I left my mom when I was 15. So, I mean, that's just amazing, 23 years. So, what I learned about this is that this disease is cunning, baffling, and powerful. I'm an alcoholic woman who drank so much vodka down so fast that I stopped breathing. I had to be rushed to the hospital. I had to be brought back to life. And how can you do something like that and talk yourself into believing you're not an alcoholic? And I am very thankful for this lesson because I am no longer judgmental of people who go back out. I used to think, how could they go back out with 7 or 8 years? Now I know how they can go back out, and I'm very compassionate to people when they're trying to get back in. So it was a real important lesson for me to learn. I'm very thankful for all the gifts that I've received, especially getting my new sponsor, Polly, who rocketed me into that fourth dimension of existence. And if I hadn't been willing to get on an airplane, which I wasn't real willing at first, I used to tell Polly, there's nowhere in the big book does it say you have to get on airplanes and be a speaker. It's not in the book. But anyway, somehow it unfolded the way it unfolded. And if it wasn't for that willingness, I wouldn't have met my husband, who's one of the greatest gifts I've received in Alcoholics Anonymous. Everybody here who knows Ted just adores him. He's just the most precious man. We've been together for 17 years. That's another big one for me. Been married 4 times. Never was I with anybody over 3 years. 17 years, and I just love him more today than I did the day that we were the day that he proposed to me. It took about a week for us to fall in love. I am so grateful for Fort Gordon Treatment Center for the Army, Navy, mostly Army, Marines, and Air Force. They come to my house every Wednesday night, and they've been coming for 16 years. And because of them, I have gone through multiple back surgeries, knee surgeries. I had a few years where it was really not fun. And those guys just kept me sober. You know, the book says nothing will so much ensure immunity to drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. And I didn't even have to go to a meeting to find them. They were delivered to my house. That was such a gift. It was just an absolute gift. But mostly I want to say that I'm thankful for Bob talked about it earlier. I'm thankful for the feeling of usefulness. I never felt useful in my entire life. I feel like today I know what God's will is for me, and that's a gift, to finally know what God's will is for me, and that's to be of maximum service to God and my fellows. I always close with this. I wasn't going to do it tonight, but I think I will because it just feels appropriate. I talked about Polly rocketing me into that fourth dimension. I know today I have been catapulted into that fourth dimension. It's talked about in 2 places in the big book. I think Bill really wanted us to know about the fourth dimension. Rocketed is on page 25, catapulted is on page 8. And that's my favorite page, is page 8, because on page 8 it gives you a description of what that fourth dimension is like. And I can tell you today, no matter what's going on with all the stuff that's going on in my life, I still know those feelings of happiness, peace, but best of all, absolutely best of all, I know the feeling of usefulness. Thank you.
I'm Bob Darrell and I'm an alcoholic. I really want to welcome the people that are new. I was impressed there was a lot of new people here, especially the two people who got the book. I mean, really, where else on the planet could you go where you get a prize and a standing ovation for recently burning your life to the ground? You'll go to a regular AA meeting, it's going to pale by comparison to that, I'll tell you. But if you're new, I'm glad you're here. And there may very well be some people here because you're sober a long time and you don't even want anybody to know, but you know you're in trouble. You don't mean to be, but you are. And maybe you came here because somebody said, why don't you come there? Maybe you'll hear something different. And I'm glad you're here. We spend a lot of time trying to help the newcomers get in the middle here, and that's very important. But somehow we're losing a lot of our old-timers, and they don't make it back. And if you're one of those guys or gals, I'm really glad you're here. You may be, I was 7 years relapsing in Alcoholics Anonymous, and then in my first year or two of sobriety, the only thing that saved my life was service. And I was thrown into a group that did a lot of service and a lot of 12-step work, and they didn't wait till you felt like you were ready. You didn't even get a vote. You just started doing it. And I didn't want to do it. I told the guy, I said, don't you think I should work on me for a while? And he said, work on you? You've done quite enough of that. Stop it. And he was right. And they pushed me into this. And because I got into service, I got on a speaker committee for the Las Vegas Roundup in my first year of sobriety. And then I was in part of that conference for a lot of years. And then the Young People's Conference, and been involved in conferences all my sobriety. And I started to listen to CDs of speakers from around the country, and I started hearing things, and I thought, oh my God, they're not talking about that in the open discussion meetings I go to. And I started realizing there was something more here than I had ever been exposed to, and the amazing thing is I wanted it. I thirsted for it. Because I'm a depressive guy who has been relapsing himself to death for years. And I went after it. And if I could say one thing to someone in this room that was sober a while and you're in trouble, or maybe you've been a relapser and you've been in and out of AA for a long time, I want you to know that there's more here, but you've got to go after it. When I was a kid, I went to a party one time I'd heard about because I really wanted to get drunk, and it was at a fraternity house. And I walked into this living room at this fraternity house, and it was, they had a keg of beer, listening to some kind of, not that lame, but not the kind of music I'd listen to, kind of music, you know, it was just okay, and people are drinking mugs of tap beer and talking. And I had a couple beers, and, you know, I'm about ready to go because I want a little more than this. I want to go somewhere and get some shots of tequila or something. I just need a little bit more than what they got there. And I was getting ready to leave. And I noticed as I'm getting ready to leave, there's some people staggering down the hall, and they look like they've been into a little bit more than this keg of beer. And I wanted what they had, and I was willing to go down that hall and find out where they got it. And I went down there. I went into this one door. There's people in there doing beer bongs. You know what a beer bong is? They were doing beer bongs, and they were smoking reefer and doing shots of tequila. Well, I went in there for a while. It was great. Went down the hall a little bit further, and they were smoking some chemical smell and stuff. I don't know what it was. And they were doing some lines or something. I don't know what it is, but, you know, I'm in. You know what I'm saying? I'm just in. Yeah. I don't go, oh, I don't wonder if that'd be bad for me. I'm just in. You know, I'm signing up, right? And I'm in there. And it was very cool. I went down a little further, and, man, there was people doing these, the tequila with the salt. I'd never done it with the salt. And it was cool, man. It was a competition. See who could make the, who could stand and not pass out first. And I went in there for a while. There was another room where, I don't know what they were doing in there, but half of them were naked, and that was interesting. But the point is, I went for it. And if you're new here, I got to tell you something. Go for it. There's a lot here. There's a lot more than you could ever, ever imagine here. But I got to tell you something. It doesn't look like it from initial observation. I don't know an alcoholic yet that's, whether he's sober 10 years and he's in the despair and depression of untreated alcoholism that has progressed for 10 years, or the guy that's just came in who's in the despair and hopelessness of alcoholism, I don't know one alcoholic suffering from alcoholism that has ever looked at the 12 steps and went, oh, yeah, that would work. Yeah, nobody says that until after we do it. And then we all say the same thing. Oh, I should have done that years ago. When I was brand new, after a failed suicide attempt, and my life was really a mess, and I had nothing, and I had problems in every area of my life, I'm probably going to do 2 years in a state penitentiary in Pennsylvania when they find me. I'm sleeping in a men's halfway house that's the bottom of it's Skid Row. I have no job prospects. I got emotional and mental problems. I'd been in and out of the mental health system for a number of years. My parents and everybody I've ever cared for will not have anything to do with me. And I shared all of that with a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he said something that changed my life. He said, first of all, he said, all of that stuff is none of your business. He said, you have one thing and one thing only to concern yourself with, and that's recovery from the sickness of alcoholism in the program and fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he made me a promise. And we don't make promises, but he made me a promise. He says, I promise you, if you'll put as much time and energy into Alcoholics Anonymous as you used to put into trying to stay drunk and run the universe, that all these problems will in time take care of themselves. And when Joe said that to me, I thought, what the heck? I don't have a plan. I just thought, I'll put myself in the middle of this thing and let's see what happens. And it changed my life. And I didn't know that it tells you in the beginning of chapter 5 why I was dying. It says, those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. And I was part of that group. The takers, the people who sit and, you know, just come to AA and do for me, fix me, make me feel better, ease and comfort seekers, relief seekers. I was one of those guys for all those years. I was the guy who came to discussion meetings and I thought my name was, does anybody want to share? And I would take hostage the whole room on my problem du jour, right? Because I was convinced, I had this delusion that if we stared as a group, if we stared at my problems hard enough and talked about them enough, that they would go away. And I got to tell you something. It has been my experience that you will never, ever, ever find the solution in the problem, no matter how obsessively you stare at it. Chuck says there's one problem and it contains all problems. And there's one solution and it contains all solutions. And you'll never find the solution within the problem, because as it says in the beginning of chapter 5, that these are contrary actions. They don't make sense until you do them. So if you're new, stop doing the crap that makes sense to you. I mean, for God's sakes, peep your track record and come with us and do the stuff that doesn't make sense to you. And I promise you, one day it will make sense to you. Thanks.
My name is Polly Pistol, and I'm an alcoholic. And I love the two people who shared before me. I could just stand up here and just say ditto, because I feel so strongly the way they feel. And one of the things for me is I feel so grateful that I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and I fell in love with this fellowship. I relapsed twice more, but I fell in love with the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've never fallen out of love with it. I have a passion for what goes on in this fellowship. I just absolutely love it. And I'm so grateful that I got sober where I got sober, because I got sober with a lot of active people. And I was just sitting here listening as Bob and Michael were talking, and I was thinking about that the service work and working with others, and that's what the book the book constantly talks about, working with others. So it must mean that that's really important, is to work with others, to be into service, to be out of myself. And I think about when I first got sober, and we had that club in Mid-Cities, and we got this old storefront and this strip mall, and we were painting it and making like a club. Well, it was not an Alano club, because we just had meetings in there. And we went in there and we painted it, and we all got together, and then at Christmas we'd have big Christmas parties and Thanksgiving parties. And if you're new here, let me just tell you, for an alcoholic like me, if it weren't fun, I couldn't stay. It's fun. Alcoholics Anonymous is fun. I've had the best time of my life in this program. And Dave and I got married, and we went off to Grand Rapids, Michigan, and then Dave said, let's go to Southern California, because he'd lived there before, having no idea that we were about to land in the Mecca of Alcoholics Anonymous, absolutely the Mecca of Alcoholics Anonymous. And how that came about is that I'd heard my AA sponsor, Dottie, speak. And what was important for me is when I moved to Southern California was to find her. And Dave had seen her before, because he lived in Utah, and she'd come to Utah to talk, and he says, I know she lives somewhere in Southern California. And what I did is I called Central Office, the Los Angeles Central Office. I said, do you know Dottie Harris? Do you know somebody named Dottie Harris? And they gave me her phone number, and I was able to find Dottie, and I got in the middle of an active group in Alcoholics Anonymous, the Big Book group in Bellflower, California. And I mean, they were doing stuff. I mean, we had breakfasts, we had quarterly breakfasts, we had potlucks, we would celebrate milestone birthdays. I mean, we were doing something. This was an active group of Alcoholics Anonymous. I later left that group and went to another group called Seal Beach Group, that Monday night Seal Beach speakers meeting. And I stayed in that group for 21 years. And one of the things that I look when I go there to visit, when I go back today, Dave and I sat in the same two chairs for 21 years. And one time there was a speaker said, you know, you ought to move around and move, you know, and don't have the same seat in your home group. And I said, that will never work for me. And one night I didn't get to the meeting as early as I normally do, like an hour or so before. And these two little newcomers sat in our chair. And I just went up to them. I said, honey, I'm going to find you the best two chairs in this room, but these two are mine. And we had a lot of laughs about that, because that's how important that was to me. And I met Michael at Monday night Seal Beach speakers meeting. We had couples meetings. We did all kinds of fun stuff. I've sponsored since I've been in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've been into service. Now, I am not someone who serves at the area level. That's not, you're going to hear all about that if Tom chooses to talk about that tomorrow or maybe tonight. That's not my thing. I don't do well at that. My husband is fabulous at that. I just can't argue 3 hours over a $10 coffee pot. It just doesn't work for me. I serve at the group level. And at Seal Beach Speakers Meeting, Dave and I were the cleanup for over 20 years. And the reason we were the cleanup is because we wanted to leave every Monday night making sure that that facility was in perfect order because we didn't want to lose our meeting place. It's really important. If we don't take care of it, we're going to lose it. So all of that has been an amazing thing. Probably to this day, the most wonderful day in my sobriety as just a day that was a celebration of my sobriety. In California, which I love that we did, we made a big deal out of birthdays. I mean, for Michael's 20th, we got her in, and we had a big party in Southern California for her 20th. I mean, whatever you can find a birthday for somebody to celebrate, we're celebrating. And what happened was my 25th AA birthday to this day is still one of the finest days of my life. And I had this big birthday party. I had all my kids, all my grandkids. And my son's a musician, and he sang two songs that were really important for me. And he sang the Kris Kristofferson song, Why Me, Lord? You know, and I just feel like that's all about a drunk. And him and his wife sang Amazing Grace. And I just got to celebrate. Now, I've never gone anywhere else where we celebrate birthdays like that. But I'm telling you, we made a big deal, right? We make a big deal out of all that. So I know that there's all kinds of what they call pockets of enthusiasm in Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I'm really grateful for is I have been through my sobriety, but certainly for 25 years of it, 26, 27 years of it, I got to spend it in Southern California, where we really were in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous doing stuff, sponsoring, enjoying Alcoholics Anonymous. And if that's not happening in your group, make it happen. Make it happen. This is a fun place. Celebrate your life. Alcoholics Anonymous is fun. The greatest joy that I've had is the love of my children, the love of my grandchildren, and most of all, I have been able to walk this journey in Alcoholics Anonymous for 32 years with my husband. And it is an amazing gift that both of us are active members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we've got to share this life together. And AA falls in love on, falling in love on AA campus, and, you know, they say these marriages don't work. Well, let me tell you, if you work the traditions and you work this program, it works. It absolutely works. Two alkies hooked up together can make it if you do the deal in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been so grateful, and I just want to say I've got some women here this weekend, and it's been absolutely fabulous that I sponsor. And I just want to tell you that if you didn't call me and let me talk to you and let me share with you, I'd be in my head and I'd be drunk. And all I can say is thank you, thank you. I want to just say again and again what Michael and Bob have had. Thank you for allowing me to be useful. I feel like today my life counts. And when I came here, I didn't feel like it counted. Thanks.
My name is Mildred Frank, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi, everybody. I'm about to bring the tone of this meeting right down to zero. All this talk about two alcoholics getting together and making it work, well, I can tell you, that's not been my experience. I will say, however, I do appreciate that somebody else has her seat in the meeting. I sit to the left, of the room, front row, and the very front seat is mine. And nobody dares sit in it. Every once in a while, a newcomer sits there or a stranger comes in, and I hear somebody go up to them and say, "Oh, I don't think this is a good idea." So, how does this go in relationship when people get sober? Well, I just want to share a few things, because I know some of you are not out there happy, joyous, and free with a partner in AA. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hands. But there are some of you who, like me, live alone. I always tell the men when I'm giving them a retreat, I'm taking resumes, but I'm still alone. You interested, Tom? That's just a smart-ass comment, because I know his wife. You know, my experience was, I'm searching for somebody to make me happy. And I found somebody, and he was a psychiatrist. And what I didn't know was that he was an angry man. And so I spent a couple of years in a very violent situation and didn't know what to do about it. And, you know, I say that because you can get through that. I wasn't in the program yet at the start of that, but I did get into the program. And when I got into the program, I found the courage through my sponsor to leave that relationship. So I know what that's about. And if anybody's out there, you know, if you ask, somebody will come that will help you to stand up and to get out of a situation that is just not good for you. I understand that. After I left that man, I was sober now about 2 or 3 years, and there was a man at the group. He spoke with a beautiful, I was going to say the tongue of angels, but that wasn't quite right. He did seem to know the steps, and he spoke beautifully, and he was a beautiful man, and he was right for me. And so he and I had a relationship, and 3 weeks after we got into this relationship, he phoned me, and he said, "I've been drinking." I said, "You've been what?" He's, "After you've got me, you're drinking?" And so he explained to me how this had happened, and I remember thinking, he's got me now. This will take care of. What I didn't know was that he was one of those people who for 12 years had been trying to get sober and would get a period of sobriety, and then he would drink again, and so on and so on. Well, we're in this relationship, and things went from bad to worse. And one day I found myself standing in my apartment with him on the bed and him saying to me, "Millie," he called me Millie, he said, "Millie, I want some beer." I said, "No." Because I thought, just pray. If he'd just pray, he'd get sober. So I said to him, "No, you pray." He said, "I don't want to pray. I want beer." Well, I had his ears in my hands. And I pounded his head on the bed and I said, "You pray, you son of a bitch." And then I went to Al-Anon. So it's, pardon?
Where'd he go?
Amazingly, I thought that without me, I had an image of his car being driven into Lake Ontario. Do you know what happened? 6 months after I broke up with him, he got sober. Without me. And when he died 16 years later, he had had 16 beautiful years as a wonderful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And all the begging and all the maneuvering and all the manipulating that I had done had not achieved it. There's a lesson there. I learned something from the Al-Anons, and I honor you. I have to tell you that. And then, about a year later, I met somebody else. And it was wonderful. And I thought we were going to sail off into the sunset, and we did for about 2 years. You know, Freud says when you get infatuated, he says you get 90 days of socially acceptable insanity. I figure we had about 2 years. And then one day I woke up and said, "I wonder who he is. I don't even like him." But there were reasons. I picked certain men. They were always handsome and rich and whatever. They always were the kind of men I thought could do for me what I couldn't do for myself and what I thought God couldn't do for me. Anyway, I stayed in that relationship. We didn't live together or anything, but we were in a relationship. We both left after 2 years, but stayed another 13, and some of you may understand what I'm saying. And it was after that relationship that I had another growth spurt. And I have had to learn to live alone. See, I don't think it's only when you are in relationship. You know, people come to me and say, you know, "I'm in relationship and he's doing this or she's doing this." And I believe that's a truth. But I think it also takes something to learn to live alone successfully. Because you haven't got somebody there to resist. You haven't got somebody there to please. And somewhere within yourself, you have to find the resources to live well and to make sure that the things get done that you can have a successful life. I often think, you know, it would be nice to have somebody at home tonight to do whatever. There's nobody in my home tonight to do whatever. And when I get back from Las Vegas, I'll have to take care of certain things. But I have learned that, and that has been a great discipline, to learn to live alone and to stop running. At first, I was always wondering, who's going to phone? Where are we going? Who's going to come? You know, so I was always trying to get something going. And I have to tell you that I have found peace within myself, so that if the phone doesn't ring, I'm not in despair because nothing is happening. And if it does ring, that's wonderful too. So that's my tale. And I think that's really all that I want to say. I'm grateful that I have my home group. And I guess there is one more thing I want to say, and that is that, you know, Bill says in some, and Michael mentioned it and you referred to it. Bill says in the big book, you know, we've been rocketed into the fourth dimension. And I got an email from a student of mine in Florida about 2 weeks ago. And she said something profound, and I think it pertains to all of us. She said, "Mildred, I'm having trouble, a challenge, living in the third dimension with fourth dimensional awareness." We've got lots of fourth dimensional awareness going here, don't we? Now, what do I do with it when I leave these rooms and I go back to people that I have to deal with, people in my home group, people I meet on the aircraft, and so on and so on? How do you live with three in the third dimensional world with fourth dimensional awareness? I am grateful to have been here to hear the people that I have heard talk about their experience living in three-dimensional world with fourth-dimensional awareness. None better than you, Bud. Thank you very much.
Yes, now, the reason I turned her down was I married a girl from Saskatchewan, where Mildred's from, and I was introduced to her by the fella who did the 12-step call on her, who's been my sponsor for about 30 years. So we really got this roped in pretty good here. But it's great to be here. I'm Tom Ivester, an alcoholic. And I think what I want to do is not so much remonstrate on what used to be and, you know, what was wonderful when it was. I want to talk about what it is that puts the fire in the engine, at least the way I like to look at it. I'll share that with you. You don't have to agree. You just hope you will nod just once in a while so I won't feel like I'm talking to nobody. There's a place right after the promises. I can't afford a big book. We don't have one. And newcomers won't give them up, so I'll do the best I can with it. There's heal. Bad boy. Yeah. Where's the promises lead? Where does the promises lead? Now, while he's doing that, I'll tell you what I want to get at. Yeah, I don't. Great, thank you, Bob. Yeah, I'm not one who believes that the real joys of Alcoholics Anonymous come in what are given to me. It's what I give to others. Is what makes the difference. And I stumbled into something a while back and didn't really stumble into it. I just happened to come up to it. They, right after the promises in the book, there's it moves right down into a little deal where here's what it says, that you know, we've got all this stuff going on, it's wonderful. How wonderful we're going to be. And then this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests that we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We commence this way of life, of living, as we cleaned up the past. I don't have my glasses. We have entered the world of the Spirit. And now the next thing is a short little blurb in this book. But for me, it's a powerful message. It's a charge to action message. Because if you follow the promises and all that wonderful stuff that's going to happen, and I'm going to be rich and famous, and my teeth will all come back, and I'll just be. It's true, wonderful stuff happens. But then to get back to the realities of just life as it goes along. And we've entered the world of the Spirit. Our task now is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. In understanding and effectiveness. And those two, that little phrase, that's not even a big phrase, but it's a big, big statement. And I read that one day and really understood what it said. You know, I want to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Now, I'm nobody special. You know, I know what it's like to be unicorn. Where's my wife? I was going to say the unique one, not unicorn, for God's sake. But yeah, I've always been, you know, for many, many years, I was the youngest person I ever met at Alcoholics Anonymous. And I got so tired of people patting me on the back and rubbing my head and telling me how lucky I was. I'm 24 years old. The average member of AA then, I think, was 80. I mean, there were some old folks there. It wasn't really 80, but they were old. And so I was just sort of the exhibit that people show around. Look at this young fellow here. It wasn't all that thrilling, you know. But then, you know, as it started to grow in the program, it started to get active in the program, things started to come alive, you know, and continue to. And then what this is saying is that, you know, when we get through with all this thing, and the thing Bob covered so well about that healing process of getting out those defects of character and dealing with the amends that go with that, powerful stuff, and it's part of the freedom. And then what this is following up is that how do you put that into the real world? How do you put that new energy and this new inspiration into the real world? Now, I'm nobody special, but I'm a pretty solid member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm committed to it. I'm committed to every element of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a home group guy, but I'm also a general service guy. I'm a DCM guy. I haven't been one for a long time, but I've show booted some other folks into it. And I support them 100%. And so I'm into the things of Alcoholics Anonymous. And have had many, many wonderful experiences. And I just want to build a little bit around that whole idea that's expressed in that little phrase, a task now is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. Let me tell you what that looks like in my life. And I'd really like, if any of this makes any sense, that last time I was down here, some people did follow up on something I talked about. And if anybody wants to do that again on any of this stuff, just Dick's got my email and my Social Security number, my bank account, got everything. But just let him know and get in touch. And anything I've got, you've got, if it pertains to Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I started doing this thing of trying to do what that says, growing understanding and effectiveness. You know, a lot of times we're prone to just backing off and criticizing. You know, about they don't get alcoholics like we used to. We're getting a whole bunch of other stuff and all kind of things. Just we get a lot of criticism and complaining about conditions. Well, I honestly don't want to waste a lot of time with that. And so I started doing something, and I do it religiously. When I see something that I'm concerned about, either something is off track or something that just doesn't seem to be working well, I don't want to criticize it. I want to try to do just what that says. I want to try to understand it. And then see if there's anything I can do about it. I'll give you an example. I'm probably going to give you several here. I'll be talking as fast as I can. It just won't sound like it. I had a concern that it looked to me like we had more people going out of Alcoholics Anonymous than coming in. And it truly did look like we had more of a loss column than a gain column. And I thought, what on earth is wrong with that? You know, that. And particularly with young people coming in. You know, they'd come in and barely get this chair taken away from Mildred. And I wondered why on earth. I want to understand that. I don't want to criticize it and say, well, this is just a new breed of people and they're not our kind of folk. I don't want to write it off. I want to try to understand that. Of why would somebody come in here, see a solution right in front of them, and dozens of examples of what it looks like? Why would you walk off? And so I want you to understand it. So I just made it a sort of a quiet little crusade of mine to start examining that by talking to people who left, trying to ascertain why they left, you know, what was it that was missing. And almost universally, what I heard was that they never got deep enough in. They never did. It got to the action level, but into the thing of the process of recovery didn't happen. Now, I don't think that's the fault of the new people coming in. I think that's the fault of those of us who are here who may fail to give the leadership to people. And so I saw that, and I was pretty well convinced that that was the case. And so I looked at it pretty hard. And so I wanted to understand it. Well, understanding is one thing. It's like if I go to a doctor, he gives a diagnosis. That's his understanding of the problem. But then he follows with a prescription. He doesn't just say that's too bad. Well, unless it is one of those just too bad. And but to understand that, and so what that breeds with me is I want to understand the problem and then ask myself, what could I do to make a difference? What could I do? Now, I don't want to write the General Service Office or anything like that. I want to see, what can I do? I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a responsible member. I'm a leader in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to call somebody else to deal with that. And so I started looking at it. And I settled on, I sat in a lot of things. I've studied the book ever since I've been in AA, and somehow I think we study it to death instead of acting on it. But the I was interested in, you know, I've taken people through the steps every way known to man. I've done it Marine Corps style, do it or die. If you don't do it, don't come back. You know, you know, just real nice, gentle kind of stuff. And and all of it had some effect. None of it had much effect. And so, I started looking at, you know, what is there that could be good to give people a stronger foothold in Alcoholics Anonymous? That's what I wanted to do. So I just sort of browsed around. I started looking at some ways that people were doing it. I found one I like, and so I decided to try it. Now, I live in a little old town. I'm not in Los Angeles, live in a little old town, but we got enough drunks per capita to go around. And so I got hold of some of the folk that I work with and some folks I sponsor and said, I want to see about doing a big book workshop here. You think big guys would be interested in it? And everybody said, yeah, man, yeah, we need to do that. So just got the word out, no formal recruiting, just getting the word out. And we wound up, and I said, now, the criteria is, I don't care who they are, how ugly they are, the criteria is, if you get in, you stay in. If you miss a meeting, don't come back. Because if you miss that, you miss a big segment of what the program is about. So you've got to be serious about it, or don't bother with it. And so people started coming in when we started it out. And there was one woman came. Now, I love women. I really do. I married one. In fact, I married several. At not the same time, but over a span of time. I like women. But there's one, when she walked in the door, I swear to God, my heart just sunk. And she was a... Well, I started saying no criticism, but it is criticism. She was an Ivy League product. She got born and bred in that area, got highly refined and overeducated, and and was a stone atheist and totally proud of it. And I thought she came to AA to argue with me, because that's what she normally did. And I thought, my God. I said, bring anybody. She's somebody. And... I said, I can't run her off. And I thought, Jesus, I'm going to spend the next year debating with this fool. And and so it started. She went in and she sat down with two sort of kindred souls that were both basket cases. And they sat off in their little niche over there. And so I would try to ignore them as much as I could. But we started out working. And a strange thing happened. She started coming alive. I couldn't believe it. I mean, I flat couldn't believe it. Didn't even argue with me much. And but she was stuck coming along. I was amazed, you know. The real critical point, you know, I'm a great believer in the value of spontaneity, particularly if it's well planned. And so we just happened one night to end the session with third step prayer. Now, that was a carefully planned, just something happened. Then, but when we came up and I said, all right, we're going to give you three options. One, you can get in a circle and get out and do it with us, or you can stand back and watch us do it, or you can just stand back. And she told me when I put that out, she said, well, I won't tell you what she said. It was not nice. She didn't learn that in an Ivy League school. But she was disputing my ancestry and everything else. And then the water broke, and she got in a circle. I couldn't believe it. I thought she'd go, had a knife or something, go come at me. But she got in a circle, and the change started. If anybody told me it would happen, if I had to leave town, she was my backup. I would turn my folks over to her, and she did good. They didn't even want me to come back. But now that's just one simple thing, you know. Well, what does it mean in terms of what I started out with? You know, why would somebody come to AA, get a good look at a program like this, and walk off? And it's because they just don't get in deep enough. We had 15 people finish that program, took a little over a year, and 15 people are sober now, probably all close to 18 years ago, and they're sober now. So what I suspected, I'm convinced, was absolutely true. When people get a good, solid introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous and get real guidance in working those steps and getting going, something happens that's powerful. And so that's just one example, you know, of things. Yeah, I'm just one guy. You're just one person. But you can do the same thing. If you're unhappy with it in your town, do it, for God's sakes. You know, don't wait for somebody else to do it. Step up to the plate. Great fun if you don't get shot down in it. But it's an awfully, awfully vital thing, I think. And it's something I treasure. I use it a lot. I use it a lot. Yeah, I'll just give you two or three examples. And if you got curiosity, feel free to follow up. You know, I worried for many years. By the way, I don't know if somebody stole my stuff, but it's gone. And I have an Oxford blue button-down shirt, not this one. This was purple. It used to be. And some tan and tan, almost brown slacks that are gone from my abode. And so, if anybody happens to find them in your abode, give them back. That's all I got. I've got on right now. And I got a meeting tomorrow morning. I got so anyway, you know, a little help from my friends wouldn't hurt a bit. The other one I was going to mention, that I'm going to mention just three or four, because just cussing the darkness doesn't get much done. Nothing, as a matter of fact. And now I was bugged for a long time, and still am, with the fact of how people have increasingly become coerced into Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah, I read something in a management magazine just a while back that I thought said it so eloquently, that coercion prevents ownership. And that's an that's a management level thing of how an organization looks at it. Coercion, it eliminates it. And so I've watched this pathetic parade of people coming in with little slips of paper and trying to get some hardhead like me to sign it for them and that kind of thing. And I didn't like that. I mean, it just didn't seem like an appropriate way to introduce somebody to AA. So I didn't like it. I wouldn't sign the paper. But I guarantee you, I never embarrassed a single person that had that paper. Yeah, I just conned them a little bit. If they'd ask me, I'd say, I tell you what, Bob will take care of that. He's got a good pen and he knows how to write. Get him. You know, I just get somebody that didn't mind. You know, it's not going to hurt them. I mind it. And then that's not a good enough solution, is it? That's just one guy doing one thing. It was good for me. But I thought about that. What on earth, how do we get to such a point that we're going to just militate and drive people coercively into AA and think we're going to have a good outcome? I don't. And so I started giving thought to that of why, you know, when I want to try to understand why would somebody do that to somebody? Well, they probably believe it's a good idea. But why would you do that when everybody just about around is negative to it? And so I was troubled about it, and I fly a lot. I was flying one day somewhere right up next to God. Right? I mean, I was close. And I had that on my mind, and I had an appointment with the director of the probation system and the head of our CPCPI committee. And I was trying to figure out, why am I so angry about that thing? And so I wrote down, it turned out to be, well, at first I wrote down, and being a fair man, I wrote down, why would the officials, why would they think it's a good idea? And I swear to God, I think I was honest in it. I listed, it was either 8 or 10 things that they probably thought had value. I couldn't think of any that had value. And then I wrote down what's wrong with it, and I think I quit at 35. That was wrong with it. One of them was, if I sign the paper, it makes me something other than what I want to be to an alcoholic. I don't want to be an affirmer, a validator, a co-probation somebody. That's not my deal. I want to carry the message of recovery, for God's sakes, not an extension of an agency. So anyway, I'm still mad about it, and we got the problem solved. But we set up a meeting with the head of the probation deal. Warn me when we start getting a little, I may not quit, but warn me anyway.
Okay.
This ain't it, is it?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, if I don't finish, I'll just finish in the morning. But so I started writing, and I wrote all that stuff down there, and you'd write the same thing probably. Then as I got through with that and then wrote those 10, we had the appointment with the guy. I took our CPCPI chair from our group. I took him over for his call on somebody. And I wanted him to take a scalp, you know. So here he went. And we went in, and anytime you go to see an agency person, you go in, they expect you to attack. Nobody ever goes in to tell them how nice they're doing the job. That doesn't happen. So if somebody comes in, you can bet they got the boxing gloves on. So we walked in, and this little guy was hid behind his desk, you know, in the battle position. So we walked in, started visiting, and I'd written on a plane. I couldn't even read it, but my wife could, and she rewrote it in Saskatchewanese or something. She rewrote it, carried it in, and the guy read it. The sixth one down was why I didn't sign papers. It's just what I just kind of said, that what it said was if I signed a paper, it makes me something other than what I want to be. And it makes me sort of a co-probation officer. I don't want to be that. And the guy gave him the paper. And he got to number 6, and he said, well, I'll be damned. Says, I've never thought of that. And I said, well, I hadn't either, really. But the other day, I was right up next to God, and he told me, that this pure sucked, and so he said, I agree, and so yeah, I think anytime you're going to go in and criticize, you've got to have something better. You can't just go in and say they're not in our field, you know, they're in a different kind of field altogether. I don't expect any creative thinking from them. They got a different mission, and so we laid out 4 samples of the things that would be better. He picked the exact one that I would have picked. It just made sense, and it made sense to him. That was just about as long as that Big Book group. That's been probably 17 or 18 years. We haven't seen a piece of paper since. And we have never had to reject a single person since. That's what I'm talking about. You know, if you want something that'll light you up in doing something, you don't need to read the book further. I mean, you read all you want to. But you got to put some action to that thing. And just simply taking those words and putting them into action, my God, what a thrill for that. And so it's simple to do. But it's the kind of thing that you could feel good about. You feel real good. And I've sent some material on that to some people in Georgia. If anybody, I'm not marketing anything. I got nothing to sell. I got a computer, and I beat it to death. I had to buy a new one every once in a while. But anyway, any of that stuff that you got any interest in, you just let me know, and we'll get it to you. Then there's a ton of other stuff. You know, we set up a deal so that we never set up we're going to set up a program in a county jail. And I wasn't really sure. I just stumbled into something we wanted to work on. County jails, you know, they either linger people for a while, or many people go into a county jail and all they do is stay overnight and get on a bus, you know. And so I've seen people go in and try to do Big Book studies with people who are going to be in jail 2 days. It's kind of ridiculous, yeah, to anybody. I will accept people doing it. Anyway, we went over there and we met with the sheriff. He's the top guy. Always want to meet with the top guy. If the top guy's too busy, I'm too busy. Go and meet with the top guy. He's the only person that has the attention of the entire organization. I won't compromise on that. And so we went in to see them and sat down with the sheriff and the deputy and the administrator of the jail, chatted. We agreed on a bunch of stuff, went over and reviewed the place, and took a look at it, saw what we thought we could do. Then we made a proposal of what we thought would be a useful program there, sent it to the sheriff. And what it said was we would not have an AA group there. We would not even have an AA meeting there. What we would have would be an AA information session. And we just took a rotating group of people from our group that would go over and make the presentation. You're kidding nobody but yourself. You got somebody getting ready to get on the bus and you go give them a bunch of heavy-duty stuff, you thump it up, it's not going to happen. And so just a simple way to do something in a productive kind of a manner. And so I think, you know, the main point in finding the joy and the thrill of really feeling like a solid member of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I think the things we're talking about here are the kinds of things that can lead to that. Just becoming more and more literate about the book won't do it. Won't do it for me. You know, knowing more and more about alcoholism won't do it for me. It's when I start to take actions, just like Bob read that a little earlier, you start to take actions, then that's when stuff happens. And so I'm somebody that, I'm an old goat, but I'm an active old goat, I'll tell you that. And I'm going to keep on doing that. So the only thing I'd say is just give that some thought. If you're not satisfied that you're on top of your game and that you're really pleased at what you're doing, take a look at some stuff like that. But you won't find it in deep thought and meditation. You know, you got to take some action in it. Thanks.
Uh,